Well, tonight on Coast to Coast AM, our very special guest, David Schrader, the author of The Other Side, also hosts Darkness Radio. We're going to be talking to David about that as well. I was just on his program tonight. He is on our affiliate in Minneapolis, 11:30 a.m., and he does his own paranormal-based talk show as well. So I was his guest, and now he's mine. So we'll be back with David in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, here we go for this Coast to Coast ride. David Schrader, host of Darkness Radio. It's a paranormal-based talk show. Again, as I mentioned, on our affiliate, Minneapolis-St. Paul. The station is AM 1130, the Twin Cities News Talk Station. He's also the co-author of The Other Side, A Teen's Guide to Ghost Hunting and the Paranormal. He was the lead judge on the Travel Channel series Paranormal Challenge and has appeared on episodes of A&E's Paranormal State and Travel Channel's Ghost Adventures TV series as well. David is a researcher of the paranormal. He was pushed into the paranormal at a very early age with visitations from his deceased grandmother. We'll talk with him about that in a moment. An encounter with Bigfoot at the age of 11, witness to UFO sightings just a few years ago, and interaction with angels as well. David on Coast to Coast. Well, you have had it all, my friend. How are you, David?
I'm doing great, George. Thanks a lot for having me here this evening.
Good. And how did our interview go on your show today?
Hey, it was a pleasure to speak with you. I mean, you're one of the greatest in radio history, and to have you share the evening with us and our listeners. I've been getting emails all evening since our interview, and people really enjoyed it. So I thank you for coming on with us.
Well, that was fun. And as I was telling your audience, David, you know, I lived in Minneapolis for a year when I was working at various TV stations there, and just had a great time. It was a great state. The people are fun. The winters were cold, but I enjoyed myself a lot.
Yeah, it's a beautiful state. I moved here 22 years ago from Chicago and fell in love, and I've never left. So I think I'm officially a Minnesotan now.
How did the paranormal world click for you? How did this start?
Well, you know, it's funny, George, as you've talked to so many guests, and as have I over the last 7 years with our show, you know, people seem to be thrust into it because of activity in their own life or from watching great shows like Sightings or In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy, and just having that fire kind of kindled underneath them. And I was lucky to have a little bit of both. I actually began my interest in the paranormal at a very early age. My grandmother had come to visit me after her passing, and I was about 3 years old. I had a dream visitation with my grandfather about 20 years ago. I grew up in a very haunted house. I've had a Bigfoot sighting, as you mentioned earlier, when I was about 11 years old. UFO sightings a few years ago, angel encounters, shadow people encounters. I've just had a really neat full gambit of activity. And I think you found that as you open yourself up more seems to expose itself to you in this field. And I've had a pretty blessed life with having these mysteries brought right to my door. It's almost like an episode of Scooby-Doo every week for me.
Tell me about the grandmother visitation in the dream state. Even though you were three, it had a profound effect on you, didn't it?
Oh, it definitely did. And, you know, I can't say, of course, if it was a dream state or not when my grandmother first made her appearance when I was around three. Because, again, as an adult here, I don't have any cognizant memory. This story was passed on to me from my mother and aunt. And after my grandmother had passed away, I would go to stay at my grandfather's house. And although they loved each other very much, my grandfather snored like a chainsaw, so they had their own separate rooms so my grandmother could sleep at night. And after my grandmother passed away, I would go there and I would stay in her room. And my mom came to pick me up one morning, and she asked if I had a nice time. I said, yeah. And I said, Grandma came to see me last night. She said, honey, that's nice, but remember, Grandma is in heaven. We've talked about this. Yeah, I know, Mommy. And she came and told me a story and told me that she loves us. And then I began to describe what my grandmother was wearing and the fact that she didn't have all of her teeth, and I thought it was funny. My mom kind of mulled on that for a couple of weeks and happened to be talking to my aunt one day and said, you know, a funny thing happened. Davey was talking to me about Mom and mentioned that she came to him the other night and read to him. And my grandmother had been buried in a closed casket, George, and the only two people that knew what she was buried in were my grandfather and my aunt. And my mom began to describe to my aunt the outfit and the fact that her teeth were missing, and my aunt's jaw hit the ground because I described to a T down to the necklace, the outfit, and the fact that
amazing.
They missed my grandmother's false teeth.
It truly is amazing.
Right, and that, you know, I mean, that opened up a door there. My aunt then, in her disbelief and amazement, began to share a tale with my mom how she had received 3 phone calls from my grandmother after she passed away.
Did this experience, even at this age, kind of click you into the paranormal in terms of having this ability?
It did. My mom and aunt were so tuned into it, and they used to read every book, and you know, they'd be laying around books by Ed and Lorraine Warren or D. Scott Rogo, Hans Holzer, all of the greats, and I would pick them up and just fervently read these books as I was growing up and exposing myself to them. And you know, it's funny, as I've gotten older and I start looking back over my experiences growing up, how many things happened that were supernatural in nature when I was younger that I had no clue were supernatural at the time. Things that, you know, now I look back and I say, you know, I guess not everybody's radio starts to talk to them in their bedrooms while they're playing with their toys. And, you know, I had a fun little radio that my grandfather had given me. It was the 70s, so the CB craze was all and about. And I had this radio that I could listen to CB scanners. And I remember playing with my G.I. Joe action figures in my room and listening to the CB scan. And I'd throw my G.I. Joe on the floor, and I would hear this metallic voice come through, and that looks like it hurt. And then I would look around my room thinking, what just happened? And then I would do something else, and the voice would again interact with me in my room. Now, again, I didn't know if it was a hyperactive imagination as a child, if it was just really good timing. But now, as we know more things, like your book that you've written with Rosemary Ellen Guiley, talking about communicating with the dead and using tools like Frank's box and the shack hack and the spirit box, I think I might have inadvertently been a part of that at the very beginning of all this.
I would have looked at my little G.I. Joe and said, all right, is this a new Chatty Cathy type doll?
Exactly.
Where's the string? Tell me about the grandfather's visitation. How'd that happen?
Well, you know, my grandfather, I was very close to him, and I'm a lucky man, George, in the fact that I just turned 44 here last month, and I can probably count on one hand how many people I've lost in my life that were very close to me. And my grandfather was very much like a father to me through most of my life. And when he passed away, I had a very hard time with that. I was in a deep, dark funk and was depressed for months. Into this, as you explained on the show earlier, you think probably one of the most popular forms of hauntings are these dream visitations.
Mm-hmm.
And again, for listeners that may not be familiar with this, a dream visitation is unlike no other dream you've ever had. It's even beyond a lucid dream. It is as clear and vivid a memory as you and I are speaking right here this evening, George.
That's right. That's right.
And I remember running through a field of tall grass, and that's the only part of the dream I was in that I remember when I heard my grandfather's voice call my name. And I stopped, and I turned around, and now I was inside my grandfather's house in Louisiana. And when I turned back around, the field was gone. I was in the house, and consciousness was back to me in a snap. And I remember looking out the back window of his house, looking at, in Louisiana, they had an older Southern-style home with a slave quarters, if you would, in the backyard. And I saw my grandfather leaving the back house and coming towards me. And, George, I remember clearly and very distinctly having the thought, I'm watching a dead man. I'm about to have a conversation with my dead grandfather. And I remember thinking, he's taking this long walk to let me understand what I'm about to have happen. And the door swung open, and my grandfather came in, and we stood face to face. And he said, kid, we got to talk. You're not dealing with this very well. And I said, no, I'm not. This is totally terrifying to me. I've been terrified of death since I was, you know, 4 or 5 years old. I used to have night terrors about being afraid, not waking up in the morning. And now here I've lost you. I've lost my grandfather. And he said, well, let's talk about this. This is why I'm here. And we began to talk about the transition of death and what happens. And he told me that actually in the last hours, he knew it was his time. And that's why he said goodbye to my aunt and my grandmother, my step-grandmother and my mom, and told them he would see them, but didn't say he would see them tomorrow. He just knew it was his time. And he slipped away that night. He said there was no pain, and he was racked with cancer at the time, George, and it was a surprise to all of us. We had just been there visiting him the month before, and he had been down on all fours playing with my son, who was named after him, and was very vivacious and full of life, as he always was. And he was racked with cancer and passed within 4 weeks of the time I saw him last.
Too fast. Way too fast.
Too fast. And he said, here there is no pain, son. You don't have to worry about this anymore. And although I'm not there with you, I'll always be around and I'll always be a part of you. And he said, well, what else would you like to know? And I said, well, you know, when you died, who was there to meet you? And he said, well, you know, your grandmother was here, and my father and my mother and my brothers and sisters that preceded me in death. And I remember having this thought, George, I kind of froze, and my grandfather looked at me and he said, what's wrong? And I said, grandma was there? And he said, yeah. And I said, what are you going to do when Noel passes away? And that was my step-grandmother, and my grandfather gave me this quizzical look, and he had a great laugh, George. He sounded like Muttley, the old cartoon character.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
He burst out with this loud laugh, and he said, what are you asking me? And I said, well, if you're with grandma, when my step-grandmother dies, who are you going to live with? And he let out with another laugh, and he said, he goes, you know, that's a great question. And he goes, when your grandmother Noelle dies, we'll all be here to greet her, as will her relatives and friends that preceded her in death. And then he began to explain to me that on earth, love is a possessive notion. I love you, you love me, I'm your man, you're my woman, vice versa.
Yeah, you didn't say it today, things
right.
like that.
It was just this possessive feel to it. And he said, here, it is just love. We are all part of love, and it is just that. And there is no ownership, and we will all be here lovingly to greet her and help her make her next transition.
Did these two experiences, the grandmother and the grandfather, did they alter your perception of things? Did you calm down about death, for example?
I did for a short time. I mean, my grandfather was very, very succinct at the end of the conversation. He looked at me, George, and he said, you've got to stop worrying about death. Live life. You've got a long time before you're going to be here with us, and we will be here to greet you when you come, but stop worrying. You've got a long life ahead of you, son. And he gave me a hug, George, and this was an interesting point that I'll revert to later on in our conversation. And as I went to put my arms around my grandfather, it felt like I was grabbing a shaft of warm, vibrating air. And I remember recoiling to the feel at first, and he said, I'm sorry, you're not used to that. And he said, okay, now. And I gave him that hug, and we were a very affectionate family, and I could feel his shirt and the bones in his arm. And I stepped back and smiled, and he said, I've got to go now, and I won't be able to visit again like this, but I'm always with you. And where it really got interesting for me, George, is as he started to fade away, I sat up in my bed, and I could see his face meld into the darkness of my room. And my girlfriend at the time sat up in bed, and she said, honey, you got to go close the closet door. I can smell your grandfather's clothes. Because after my grandfather had passed, I kept a bunch of his clothes in my closet.
It was
a comfort. It was, I could smell him and feel better about it. And she could smell the cologne and the musk from my grandfather. And I looked over, and the closet door was shut. So here was a shared experience,
yeah,
dream,
right,
actually folded into reality. So it definitely had an experience with that. And I, for a long time, did not have a large fear of death. I no longer have that, I'm afraid I'm not going to wake up in the morning feeling. But I'm still in no rush to get there, and I'm not keen on the idea of being away because I've got seven children, George. I want to be around here till I've got great-great-grandchildren of my own.
Absolutely. You know, David, life is to enjoy it as long as you can. There's no rush getting off this. I think both of us have a better understanding of what's on the other side, not only through our experiences, but our losses. And, you know, but there's no rush. There's no rush.
None whatsoever. No. And that's what I've really enjoyed about the experience of investigating the paranormal and learning these things. It seems like with every layer we peel back of this onion, there's another 100 questions that pop up. And then as soon as I start to think I've got my head wrapped around it, a whole new shift happens and a whole new paradigm and a whole new experience. And that is part of the joy and excitement for me and the work that I do. I just love watching these things unfold.
This haunted house that you grew up in,
mm-hmm.
Anything bad happened there, or were these just experiences from family?
You know, I never had any frightening experiences in the house. Unnerving. You would be alone in the house, and you would hear footsteps upstairs. You would hear what sounded like conversations just out of earshot, and you'd go upstairs to find nobody there, and then I would hear things down in the basement where my room was. So it was never anything terrifying. It was always just that there was something else there. But what I found was really interesting, George, and, you know, talking to neighbors like we used to do back in the 70s and 80s when, you know, we weren't all strapped to our Facebook and Twitter accounts and our smartphones and, yeah, and computers. We would talk about the fact that here I grew up in Medina, Illinois, which is a suburb 22 miles west of Chicago. And, you know, Poltergeist had been out. We'd, you know, all these great movies. And, of course, everything is always on sacred Indian burial ground. That's why these hauntings are taking place. But the one thing that was funny about our town was that all of us, especially the basement sleepers, as we called ourselves, you know, we had the fans going. We didn't have the central air at that time, so we would have fans going at night. We would all experience what we called the party ghosts. And that was for houses around me in blocks. We would talk to the different kids in the neighborhood, and they would talk about how they would hear these, for lack of a better word, parties going on downstairs at night, clinking of glasses and the chittering, and they couldn't hear the words exactly, but you could hear music subtle in the background. And I thought, well, isn't this interesting? We grew up in the party Native American area, I guess. And it was just such a strange phenomena growing up believing that. And you know, actually, it was only a few years ago that I saw a documentary about how the ear works and the way sound travels. And I started to see things fall into place. And since then, I've actually gone back and done this experiment at my mom and dad's house. Luckily, I'm able to go back there. But I was able to debunk one of the things that always puzzled me and a lot of my neighbors. At the end of our street was the Medina Golf Course, the country club, which has hosted many different PGA tournaments. And it's always lively and happening. Well, as we know, George, sound waves continue to travel. And if you don't tune into the right frequency, you don't find them. And if there's not something for it to hit and create a vibration for, there's no way to hear it. Well, what was interesting is when the fans were on, we could all hear these things. When we turn them off thinking there was a TV on upstairs or something going on, the sound would go. And I realized that now what was happening is the sound waves were traveling from the country club and they were hitting the back of the fan, and the sound template, that white noise that was coming through the fan, was creating a vocalization template that was creating that noise to allow those vibrations. Although they weren't tight enough to be concisely heard, we could still pick up what was going on there. And since I've mentioned that to a lot of the friends that still live in the neighborhood, they've all experienced that and laugh about it. Now we've kind of debunked that paranormal experience. But with that said, I had truly one of the most frightening experiences of my life growing up in Medina. I was walking to my friend's house one day, and I was just passing by a neighbor's house, and I glanced over, and I saw him standing in the window, mm-hmm, his arms folded behind him, looking at me, and nothing too innocuous or frightening about that. And I took a few more steps and turned back around, and now he was outside of his house in front of his hedge, which means he somehow went through a window, across the sidewalk, and over a, you know, about a four-foot hedge in order to be there without making a sound and without breaking a sweat. And I remember looking back down and trying to process, and I took a few more steps and turned, and now he was in the middle of the yard staring at me.
Oh.
And I started to pick up my pace, and I got to the corner of the yard, and I turned, and he's about an arm's length away from me. Now, he did nothing, George. He wasn't terrifying. He wasn't screaming at me. He wasn't anything like you'd see in the horror movies. But it was so unnerving that he could move so quickly, and he was following me. And I remember running. I Scooby-Dooed it all the way down to my friend's house. And I'm 44 years old. When I go back to visit my family, George, I still take the long way, so I do not have to pass that house.
That's great.
But watching the movie The Ring, the way that ghost moved, that was one of the most unnerving experiences I've ever had. And like I said, it's funny because there's really nothing terrifying about what that ghost did, but it was the way that it moved. And that was one of my first encounters, seeing a full-on apparition in a very cognizant adult manner where I could remember what I was seeing and knew what was going on around me.
David, when we come back, we're going to talk about your Bigfoot sighting at the age of 11. Also your UFO encounters as well. Mm-hmm. David Schrader's book, The Other Side, his website, darknessradio.com. I'm George Norrie. We will be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. We shall be right back in a minute. Don't touch your dial. Well, David's going to pay a little visit to Dracula's Castle, Transylvania. We'll talk a little bit about that next hour with him. And when we come back, let's talk about his Bigfoot sighting on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We're with David Schrader, Darkness Radio. David, your Bigfoot sighting, age of 11. What happened? Where were you?
Well, my stepdad's parents owned 40 acres out in Foley, Alabama, which is not far from where I met you earlier this year by Pensacola, Florida, George.
Okay. All right.
And every year for Thanksgiving, we would make the trip down to Foley, and we'd spend a week there and have Thanksgiving with the family. out of the 40 acres, I think they only used maybe a total of about 10 acres. The rest was just a wooded wetland, beautiful place. And they had their own pond, which they kept stocked with fish so all the grandkids could go out and go fishing. And we used to sit there for hours at the pond, and you would hear things stomping around back in the woods. And, you know, I never thought twice about it as a little kid. I just assumed it was wild animals. But I always remembered how loud the stomping was. And when I was about 11 years old, and I was down at the pond with my cousin Rob, we were fishing one day, and we could hear the stomping. And it was coming closer and closer to us from the back of the pond. And we kept looking at each other very nervously, wondering what was coming towards us. You know, we hadn't seen our fathers go off into the woods hunting, so we didn't know what was coming towards us. Well, at the back of the pond, there was a little rickety, like a bridge that they had there, and there were bushes all around it, tall bushes. And as we sat there, my heart was racing. The thumping kept getting closer and closer. You could hear the crunching of the branches and the leaves as it was coming through the woods. And then at the top of the tall bush next to the bridge, I saw what looked like, and I always refer to it as Chewbacca, this Chewbacca-like hand grab the top of the bush and press it down. And it was this long fur, but it was a gray, black, matted fur. And it pushed down the top of the bush, and we could see it, and it had this huge mane of gray-black hair and the deep inset face. And we only saw about maybe half of its face from the nose up as it sat and stared at us. And my cousin and I just stood there frozen for a few moments, and then we looked at each other like, are we actually seeing this? And looked back, and I remember just feeling numb for a few seconds, and it felt like we were staring at it for hours, but we ended up turning tail and running as fast as we could back up to the house, and half expecting it to be one of our dads joking around with us because they were good at playing tricks. So we got to the house, and every family member was there and accounted for. And it was enough to unnerve my dad and grandfather and uncle that they went out with their guns to go check in the woods to make sure somebody wasn't out there that didn't belong. But that, to this day, is one of the most unsettling moments I've ever had, because I can remember it vividly. It was definitely animalistic in nature. It wasn't just a big, dirty hippie that was walking around in the woods. It had a huge mane of gray-black hair, and the paw, the hand, just that fur coming over the top of the hand, I remember it very clearly. And it was really amazing. And they used to have a lot of strange things happen there by their home. They would have craft that would fly over their house slowly and light up their yard and take off. And you know, we always kind of pushed it off because it was near Pensacola, and there's the naval base, and there's all the different military installations. So we thought maybe they were just flying maneuvers over that area. But it's kind of weird that they would light up the entire yard, and they would cruise over it very slowly. And my grandfather and grandmother would say they would hear no sound. It would just be lights that would light up the property and yard and take off. But, that was my one and only Bigfoot encounter. But I'm so intrigued. I'd love to go and try to find another area that's wrought with Bigfoot activity and try to go out and see if there's something to experience again.
David, what do you think Bigfoot could be?
You know, as I've talked to experts, I think Bigfoot, if anything, is probably an interdimensional creature. I think that would make the most sense of why there'll be footprints that just stop in the middle of nowhere. And it may be that they're just kind of traversing between their dimension and ours. You know, Native American Indians have talked about these creatures, and civilizations going back thousands of years have talked about these guardians and these large, hairy friends of nature that just kind of live and walk amongst us. So I believe that they exist. I just don't know that they're necessarily of our plane of existence.
You had an opportunity to go to James Gilliland's ranch, right?
Yes.
What did you think of that place?
Well, you know, I got to tell you, George, the first experience I ever had with James Gilliland was hearing him on Coast to Coast. And I was so intrigued by the stories that he told, but I remember the one thing that stood out was that you had asked him, you know, how often does this happen? And he said that anyone was welcome to come, and he believed on a clear night we had a 90 to 95% chance of seeing things fly over his property. And I remember talking to my producer, Tim, at the time, and I said, this is just too good as an investigator. How can I not go put this guy to the test? And I'd looked at the website, and I'd seen the photographs and seen some of the video, and it was so inconclusive to me, I had to go. And I'll tell you, George, that changed my perception of reality nothing else has since. I went there, and unfortunately, I arrived in October. It was very cloudy the first night, and I didn't even really end up going to James's ranch. I ended up just staying at the hotel there in Trout Lake, Washington. But I remember looking up at the volcano there that they believe is the base for some of these UFOs. And I thought what was so intriguing to me is it was brutally cold. I was in a parka and gloves and hat, and I was still freezing. But I thought what was weird was that the clouds that were hanging over the volcano, there were lights pulsating, multicolored lights pulsating in the clouds. And now I'm a skeptical believer, George. I believe that there are a lot of really weird things going on around us. I don't believe every story that I hear. I don't believe every encounter. And I think, you know, until you have the encounters yourself, it's hard to wrap your head around these things. So I immediately said, okay, this is probably some kind of weather effect and gases from the volcano mixing with the low pressure fronts. It's probably something very easy to explain. And then the second night I went out there, the skies were clear, and James had a family there from Alabama, and we were all watching up in the skies, and he said, he goes, this is what's going to happen. He goes, probably around 9 or 10 o'clock tonight, things are going to just start to move. And I've never seen a sky as beautiful as I have over the lake or over the skies over Trout Lake, Washington in my life. It is truly like you're looking into the heavens. It is so beautiful and vivid, and every star just lights up. You can see the Milky Way. It's just phenomenal. It's an experience just in itself. But sure as heck, we were out there maybe 45 minutes, and in the 2.5 hours I stood out there, George, I saw things moving, and a lot of it I could say, okay, that's just a satellite, it's moving in a straight trajectory, but there were some things that would go and then bank off at strange directions and take off like a shot, and that I couldn't wrap my head around. But the third night when I was there, my first trip, is when my life changed when it came to UFOs. And do we have time for that story?
Oh,
right
yeah,
now?
We sure do. Absolutely.
Okay. I went there, and the family from Alabama was there, and a few other people had shown up. And for so much of the time, we would stare at the volcano because, again, that's where the activity was known to take place. And after half of the night, I decided to go out in the field, and I turned around, and I watched the other direction. I'm thinking, wow, we're limiting ourselves here. Let's see what else we can find. And as I stood in the field, sure enough, we saw some things going. And, you know, at one point, there were this set of stars in like a triangle formation, and the one at the top, the peak of the triangle, would blink on and off, not twinkle like a star, but it would literally blink on and off, and it was like the size of a grain of rice. So I'm looking to see if there's clouds going by it, and James had one of those laser pointer pens, and he would point to it.
Did you have any night vision goggles or
at that time? I did not.
Okay.
But he flashed, and all of a sudden the peak light went out, just the other two stayed on. And we talked for a few more seconds, and I said, James, where did that light go? And he blinked at it again, and it got intriguing because here this grain of rice light suddenly lit back up like it was signaling to us, and it was about the size of a dime. So it went from that grain of rice to the size of a dime and flickered at us three times and then went off again. And I thought, well, that's just weird. Whatever, that was bizarre. But then I saw from behind one set of pine trees, and it was probably a good 100 yards away from me, I saw from one set of pine trees this thing fly between one set of pine trees to the other. And, George, I can't wrap my head around what it was, but it looked like a stingray or a manta ray. It was blue. It lit up, but it was not lighting up the area. It was like self-contained light, and it fluttered in the sky like it was swimming. And it went from behind the one set of trees to the other. And I remember thinking, he's pulling the wool over my eyes. This is so weird.
You know, I was going to ask you, does he have a friend someplace else launching these things or kites or anything like that?
And that's what I was thinking. And I began running full out towards this. And I'm grabbing rocks and I'm throwing them as I'm heading because I'm thinking he's got some screen up there. This looks like a bad 1980s aha music video effect. This is just impossible. I can't wrap my head around this thing. And from 100 yards, it was as big as my hand. So that means it had to be huge going through those trees. And I went running up there. There was nothing there. And when I came back, James said, what did you just see? And I explained it to him, and he just, you know, as you know, he's a very calming man, you know, and he just said to me, he goes, well, what you saw was a biological craft. And I said, what do you mean a biological craft? And he said, this is a ship that's half machine and half living organism. That's how they traverse between the dimensions. And what it did was, you just happened to catch it as it was moving between dimensions, and it was in your visual spectrum. And he goes, we have those over the property all the time. Now, I just saw this thing, and I still looked at him, and I thought, what are you smoking up here, James? But I had no other explanation. This just blew me away. And to this day, I, you know, 5-6 years later, I'm still perplexed by what I saw and totally astonished. And I've gone back there 3 more times, and I've never been let down with the activity that I see over the property.
So it's constant. You know, I was going to go out there a few years ago. I haven't done that yet. It's the one thing I have not done. I've gone all around the country, but I haven't gone up that way yet. And it would be well worthwhile, wouldn't it?
George, I would be happy to go with you because I love watching the experience of people. I brought people up there, and they're like, "Yeah, the cast from A&E's Paranormal States, you know, Ryan and Sergio.
Oh yeah, yeah,
they're ghost hunters." And because of the passion I had about this place, they actually asked me, "Let's go do an off-site episode. Let's do one that has nothing to do with ghosts. Take us up there, Dave. Impress us. If this is that great, we want to go." And we went up there, had some great high-tech night vision goggles, had the great cameras, and we caught things in the sky that were unbelievable. Things that would light up and signal back to us, things that would move around at unbelievable speeds, that would stop on a dime. And one of the most profound moments was at earlier in the day, James pointed right up to the part of the sky, and he said, I'm being told telepathically around 10 o'clock tonight to watch that part of the sky. Later on in the episode, during the filming, they brought the psychic Chip Coffee on board. And they didn't tell Chip why we were there. He's used to ghost hunting, and he came out, and he immediately picked up on, there's some kind of alien energy here. I'm picking up something totally out of this planet. And then he pointed to the same part of the sky, and he said, I think we need to watch this part of the sky tonight. And at 10 o'clock, almost to the button, is when we saw this thing moving across the sky, and it stopped. And when we all put our laser pointers on it, it began to flash and signal at us and then rocketed it off. It was astounding. Just a phenomenal experience to see these things with your own eyes. I mean, there was just no way to wrap your head around. It's not a spy plane. Spy planes don't signal back to you. I don't think it's a satellite. You know, I mean, I don't know what it is. It's going to be a UFO to me because I certainly can't identify it. Is it from another planet? I don't know. Is it from another dimension? Hard to say, but there is definitely activity taking place over his property.
Do you think he's living in a UFO pathway or some kind of portal?
Well, you know, that area is rich in history, and the Native Americans have talked about all types of things, from spirit energy to Bigfoot energy to these flying lights in the sky. So I think there is something to it. And, you know, I went up there, it was like 4th of July with a few of my friends who actually ended up appearing on the episode of Paranormal State with me as witnesses. And when we went up there the one night, it was turning into a cloudy night, and he had this huge grouping of people that had come up for the UFO experience. I mean, there was probably a good 150, 200 people there. And the clouds started to come in, and everybody started getting dejected. And this was so intriguing to me. He said, no, they said they're going to make themselves known to us. Don't worry. And George, hand to God, the clouds filled the sky except for the circle over James Gilliland's ranch.
That's weird.
There was a perfect circle of night sky that allowed us to see things throughout the evening. And what was interesting, as we talked about on our show, Darkness Radio, earlier this evening about intent, there were all of these people with the intent of seeing things. And as they slowly petered away throughout the night and people would go back to their tents to sleep or go away, the clouds would slowly close in. And it got to the point when everybody had gone to bed and then the clouds finally sealed up that gap. I mean, it was very Close Encounters of the Third Kind feel to it. But it was truly an amazing moment to just watch the sky open around his property and only around his property. You don't have to believe in UFOs, but there were 200 of us there witnessing this huge cloud formation that surrounded everywhere but his property.
Are people videotaping and audio taping this?
Oh, yeah. There's constant video footage. You can go on YouTube and see Gilliland's Ranch or Isetti Ranch and UFO Ranch, Washington. You'll see the footage. And there are some things you just cannot discount as being a simple aircraft. There are just some really amazing things going on in the skies. And that has intrigued me ever since. And like I said, I've been there 3 times. I'm champing at the bit to get back out there again and experience more. As a matter of fact, I heard from James this evening telling me he was going to listen in and was happy to see I was going to be a guest this evening. But that was a life-altering moment. And, you know, George, he told me, he goes, now that you've seen, Dave, now that you've opened up, they will make themselves known to you. And I kind of laughed, and I thought, okay, this is a very nice hippie man who's, you know, very into the whole tree hugging and love is love. And I remember laughing to myself, and as I was flying home from Seattle, Washington to Minneapolis, it was pitch black and dark, and everybody had turned out their lights in the plane and sleeping. And I remember looking out the window, and I could see the Big Dipper outside the window. And I remember thinking, okay, he said they can hear us telepathically. So I started thinking, show me something, prove to me. I just spent all weekend watching this. Now I'm up in your element. Show me something to prove to me that you are there. And this wasn't just some big crazy hallucination. And as I kept thinking that, this ball of white light came flying across the sky, entered the top of the Big Dipper, and then stopped at the bottom of the Big Dipper and just held there. The plane continued to move, but it held there and then rocketed off at a 90-degree angle and just moved like nothing I've ever seen in my life. And, I said it, for anybody else that might have been awake watching me, I suddenly look like William Shatner from the old Twilight Zone episode. I'm looking around the plane. I've got my face smashed against that little window, hoping somebody else witnessed this with me.
Or you'd see a little gremlin on the outside.
Well, that I wasn't so keen on, but I wanted to know if anybody else saw that UFO.
That's something. David, tell us a little bit about your book, The Other Side.
The Other Side, A Teen's Guide to Ghost Hunting and the Paranormal. It's a book that we wrote along with Patrick Burns from the TV show Haunting Evidence and Marley Gibson, a young teen paranormal author. And we wanted, you know, Patrick and I are both fathers, and we have kids that are coming up and interested in all the paranormal shows. And as much as I enjoy the shows for the entertainment value, there's a lot that's being missed. And there are many people who claim to be paranormal experts now because they own every episode of Ghost Hunters or Paranormal State or Ghost Adventures on DVD. And there's so much more, as you know, that goes into paranormal investigating and research. And we wanted to create a book because there was nothing for younger people to really learn. And we didn't glamorize it or glorify it. There's a lot of really boring downtime when you're doing this, and it can be very tedious, and as you know, it can be dangerous, not just in the supernatural aspect, but going into locations by yourself or going into locations in the middle of the night where a lot of these old abandoned buildings would seem so exciting. You don't know who's squatting in there, homeless people, drug addicts, gangs. There's been reports in the news, as I know you've talked about over the last few years, of paranormal teams being chased out with axe-wielding squatters.
Yeah.
So just in that alone, we wanted to cover why we do what we do, what are we hoping to accomplish, and then just kind of going through everything from how we do what we do, what is a ghost, what are all of these different phenomena, how do we go about setting up an investigative team? How do we get permission to get into these locations? And this, you know, although it's for teens, it's really good for anybody. We've had great response from people that have read the book for every age group. They really love what we've put into the book, and I'm very passionate about it. And I you know, there's been some controversy about people not happy that we're trying to teach teens or youngsters how to ghost hunt. But I think it's just as important to teach them the right way to do things, because if they're going to go out, which they're going to, I'd rather that they're taking advice from somebody who's been out there in the field and can give them solid information about it.
There's no doubt about it. David, when we come back, we're going to talk about some angelic encounters, shadow people, a webcam fright that you've gone through, and of course, we'll talk about your trip to Transylvania with Joshua P. Warren.
Never miss a detail on a show or a guest. Get the new Coast Zone newsletter, available for free at coasttocoastam.com.